Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And tonight with me is my co-host, Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. Today we are joined by Brooke Baker, a former member of the Reformed Baptist Church. Brooke is here to share her compelling story and explain why she believes that her upbringing in this community aligns with the characteristics of a cult. Brooke, thank you so much for joining us and being willing to share your experiences.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for anytime a cult survivor steps forward and shares their story, especially non-anonymously. It's a very brave. It's very brave of you. So thank you. Okay, where would you like to begin?
I guess first thing I wanted to just do is define what a Reformed Baptist is for most people who probably haven't heard of that denomination before. It's similar to your Southern Baptist or Bible churches, but typically they're a lot smaller and kind of it's a more fringe denomination. They hold to confessions that were written in the 1600s. The most common one being, which my church believed, was the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith. It's more generally to me, they hold to Reformed theology that has a little bit more of, well, people have a bit more familiarity, I think, with Reformed theology in general.
So was this cult part of a larger cult and branched off, or like how did this cult start? Do you know the history?
I mean, Reformed theology has existed for a long time. There are probably some issues. I mean, there's some issues I have with Reformed theology as a whole that I think lends itself to cult-like behavior. But typically, the main thing is that they're independent of larger Christianity. There's different branches throughout modern history. There have been some resurgence. There was one in the 1990s, I think, or even it started a little bit before that, kind of the 60s toward the 1990s. There was a pastor by the name of Albert Martin, if you've heard of him, who kind of got Reformed, probably brought a lot more popularity to Reformed theology. So there's a few like independent churches probably in, you know, throughout the United States that call themselves specifically Reformed Baptist that tend to model themselves after sort of how he did things there.
Can you explain some of the characteristics that lean more toward cult-like behavior? That
if you want to give us a little bit how you got involved.
Well, I mean, I didn't really have too much of a choice in it. My parents started the church. There wasn't really a church that believed the things that we believed, at least not specifically, and I think the biggest thing that I felt like that made it cult-like was that they were detached from sort of broader Christianity. And we didn't do very much to promote ourselves or you know, be active in the community. My pastor growing up always just said, you know, people will find us. So the only people who were looking for us were people who were already familiar with that sort of theology or coming from a different church. So the denomination was always very small. So there were not a lot of people who had differing opinions. So it was just a very sheltered kind of environment. It was a very strict environment. I mean, it's a very strict Christian environment.
Well, most cults are very strict. You know, from the outside, they love bomb you to get you to come in. I don't know if that's what happened to you, but once you're in, out comes the playbook, and that you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. So you said your parents were Reformed Baptist, and they mm-hmm. were in a, I'm guessing, if you don't have to mention the town you were in, they formed the church mm-hmm. in that town?
Mm-hmm. They helped form the church.
And you recruited other members of the community?
We were not active in recruiting anybody at all. Honestly, like I said, most of the people that joined were people who already knew about it or were already interested in that denomination.
So I'm guessing this is Southern United States.
Southern United States.
Okay. All right.
Was it isolating?
It was very isolating. If you look up Reformed Baptists on Wikipedia, you'll find that the article about them is quite favorable because it's edited by people within the Reformed Baptist community, seminary students. There's Reformed theology is not unpopular, but there are far fewer churches, I think, that make that sort of their entire identity.
Can you give us some side examples? So to me, Reformed theologist, I studied theology in college, but it didn't reform me. It didn't make me, if anything, it made me run. So what were some of your teachings? So were you Christianity? Were you New Testament, Old Testament? Any Testament, any Bible?
It was both. I mean, they both Old Testament and New Testament. They hold to the doctrine of inerrancy like a lot of Christians do. But my understanding of that is that there are different schools of thought and sort of what exactly that means. And their position on it was pretty much eliminated the, you know, human aspect of interpreting the Bible. So to disagree with, you know, how the church did things was really to kind of disagree with, you know, the word of God.
When you say the church, which church? The Roman Catholic Church?
Our church.
Like your church, okay.
Our interpretation, right, our Reformed Baptist interpretation of what the Bible says is basically the word of God.
Okay. Was Jesus part of your, yeah, all right, because I think in JW, in the house of Yahweh, they don't believe in Jesus, right? Jesus was not.
I'm not sure about JW 100%. In the house of Yahweh, we did. We just called him Yahshua, which is the Hebrew name for Jesus. But yeah, we did. That was part of the teaching. But we didn't believe in the Trinity.
All right, so what I'm hearing so far is a church that's practicing theology and Christianity, but where did the, because at the beginning you said it was very restrictive, so was it in the, because we've heard stories, was it in the way you had to dress, was it in the way you, like, could you watch movies, could you go on dates, could you have telephones, cell phones, was it, kind of give us walk us through that.
I wasn't aware of any explicit code of conduct that we had to follow. If it was mentioned in our church constitution, it was probably vague, you know, something like, you know, members are expected to, you know, adhere to, you know, a modest dress code in keeping with what the Bible says, which is super vague. But in my experience, it was, I mean, people would say people would dress more conservatively on average and were expected to. Growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch really movies for the longest time. I mean, eventually I was, but never. We never really watched cartoons or anything. I mean, I was homeschooled. My parents didn't want me going to public school. So I had a pretty sheltered upbringing in that regard.
So you were shielded from the outside world?
Quite a bit.
Okay. How about medicine?
Medicine, yes. They're very anti-medicine. And just in general, like I said, I don't know if it's necessarily coming down from the church specifically. Like, I don't think any pastor would say, like, no, like, you can't get medicine, you know, for this issue. However, there's, because it's all made up of people who are sort of in this faith already, there's just kind of, there's a huge lack of education around modern medicine for a lot of the people who attended. But,
well,
I know.
Let me ask you this. So if somebody was pregnant, could they go to the hospital and have the baby in the hospital?
Yes, they could do that for sure. But I think, you know, a lot of time, like, mental health issues were definitely stigmatized.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, if you brought up that you had a mental health issue, you know, your pastor would recommend, you know, counseling or something like that, you know, within the church.
Not
by a medical health professional or
God
psychiatrist.
God forbid somebody,
you know, it's
who's
like,
trained.
Oh, you're feeling depressed, like, you should just, you know, you should just read the Bible more, kind of
pray.
Stuff. And pray about it.
I love that. I just love that.
Yeah. So I have a question about the schooling. Was it, in general, did all of the members' children, were they all homeschooled, or was it just your parents chose
all,
to homeschool?
All of them that I knew.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't know. There may have been, at times, there may have been some, maybe like one or two families maybe, but I don't even know. And I think, I don't know that the church would say that they can't, but there would probably be a discussion about it, or they'd probably strongly recommend it. But most people in that denomination, in my experience, do homeschool their kids because for whatever conspiratorial reasons.
Did you have elders, like the committee of these men who sit around and make all the decisions, or if you did something bad, you had to be called into the elders and have a talking?
Pretty much. I mean, that's the pastors were called elders. For the longest time, we only actually had one pastor. They always wanted to have more than one. Like, I always wanted to have more, like, a plurality of elders, but they never really did. We also had deacons. I mean, a lot of churches have deacons too, but.
What age were you when your parents started this new church in your town?
I don't know the exact date that we were incorporated as a church, but I was in it my whole life since I was a little kid. I remember being a part of that community. Maybe when we became a church, I was probably like 5 or 6, maybe.
Okay. And not to jump too far ahead in your story, but at what time did you leave?
I left after I came back from college in Kentucky is when I left. I pretty much after that I stopped going, went to other churches.
Oh, so okay. I was just going to ask you, so which is common. So we've hearing that after COVID, many cults lost their members. But of course, like in the Amish community, they allow these Ramasadan or whatever it's called, where they can go out for a year. So you go to college and you start seeing the world the way it really is, unless you went to what college did you go to?
Well, I actually went to a private Christian college that was
owned by the
Southern Baptist. Southern Baptist Seminary.
So you were surrounded by them.
I was still surrounded by people who definitely think similarly. However, it did open me up to the fact that there are other denominations out there, you know, that believe different things. And I through those experiences, I realized that I didn't want to go to that kind of church. So I went to other ones at the time while I was still kind of working through what I believe.
And would you say,
I don't currently go to a church. But.
Would you say that's when your critical thinking kicked in?
That and during high school is kind of when I started to doubt things and raise a lot of questions, but I never really got answers. You know, they're always like,
oh, you're not going to, or if you get, if you do get answers, you're going to be gaslit. So yeah, that's not uncommon.
Did they practice or do they practice shunning or disfellowshipping when people leave?
Not when people leave that church specifically. No, they wouldn't shun somebody. I feel like most people left, honestly, before they were ever excommunicated, just because they just felt uncomfortable by the whole thing.
Right. Did any of them try to still communicate? Like, did anybody have their children that left and the parents were told, oh, don't talk to them anymore? Or vice versa, parents that left and children were told, don't talk to them anymore? Or did that just not happen?
It did not happen in my church explicitly that I'm aware of. But having been out of that whole denomination for some time, I am aware of pastors saying things to that effect, you know, depending on, you know, if the, you know, I would say it's very borderline being, you know, being a cult or not. It shares enough similarities with mainstream Christianity that I think draws people in.
Right.
But
seems like it didn't have enough substance to keep them.
No, I mean they're very small and they're detached from a lot of they don't have a lot of unity, I guess, with other denominations. I remember growing up thinking, you know, pretty much everyone else wasn't really a true Christian because they didn't, you know, believe the same thing.
Okay.
So let's say in this state you were in and this town that your parents started this church, was there a same church in the next town over or maybe 10 miles down the road? Or was it really scattered?
Ours was the only one I know of that was in Texas.
Wow.
There were a lot of
It's a big state.
It's a big state. There were a lot of, obviously there's a lot of Bible churches, a lot of Southern Baptist churches down there that would be pretty similar. But yeah, certainly not in the metropolitan area. There were no other churches that called themselves Reformed Baptist.
I have two questions for you. One is simple and one is going to be a little like what we talked about earlier. It might be difficult to answer. Are they still around?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so. Pretty sure.
So you're not in touch with, did your parents leave too? Or are they still in it?
They left, not.
Because they started it.
Yeah, because we moved eventually and, you know, found a similar church in the Northeast. As I would say, there's probably a couple or a few, maybe in like every state.
So how did they support themselves? It seems like you had a very small parishioner of people. Like, for example, throw out a number. Members. How many members were in your specific church in that town in Texas?
I think the most we ever had was maybe 100.
Okay.
And we only had one pastor for the longest time and pretty much did no community outreach. For most of the time that I was there, we didn't have our own building either.
No brick and mortar church?
Mm-mm.
So where did you hold services?
We rented a lot of places throughout Dallas.
Which will bring me back to the question, where did the money come from? Because it sounds like I always bring it back to what I know because I was brought up in the Roman Catholic Church. When we had services, the basket was passed. And you know, the more people that were well off to do, they put the $100 in the basket, whatever. And of course, the less fortunate put the dollar or $10 in. Was it funded that way, like during services, or was there a tide? Because most cults have a tide.
Yeah. So every service they had a, you know, like a tide that they would pass a basket, and it was kind of expected that people did at least 10%
of their paycheck,
right? Because that's what it says in the Bible. But so that, I guess that may have been enough to cover our rent and pay the only pastor that we had, but It certainly wasn't enough to do any sort of.
You celebrated Christmas?
We did, yes.
Celebrated.
We never
Easter?
Hosted hardly anything there.
Yeah, so you didn't have you probably had a Christmas mass or something, but
yeah.
I just from being in the community, like I live in an area where there is Greek churches and of course temples and Catholic churches and all year long they're having festivals. They shut down the streets and they have these 6-day, 7-day festivals, and it's more to raise money for them because it's they bring in a carnival or something. It sounds like you never did any of that. Mm-mm. No. Okay. Here comes the question that I'm a little hesitant to ask, but I would say 70% Melody of all the cults that we've interviewed so far had a story of, let's just say, I'm dancing this question around. Did you see any sexual abuse?
I didn't, no.
Were you aware of any? And I'm not trying to say that there was. We hear that there's always, that these churches and these mm-hmm. cults are the hiding in plain sight, the pedophiles and the sex offenders, where they can come and, but if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. I'm not trying to.
It didn't happen that I was aware of in my
good.
Church.
All right, good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah,
we're always happy to hear that.
Yeah, because we've heard horror stories, and then of course there's the cover up, and law enforcement can't get involved, and so forth and so on.
There was a big cover up with Southern Baptist churches throughout the U.S., but nothing that I was ever aware of for Reformed Baptists. No.
So what? Was there anything specific that happened that caused you to leave, or did you just start the cognitive thinking and thought your way out of it? And or did you leave at the same time as your parents, or did your parents leave before or after you? How did that all play out?
Well, we left the church that my parents helped start just because we moved. But I left that whole system of belief just, you know, as I started to ask questions.
But what kind of teachings or what were they profiting the prophets, or what were they teaching that you felt was not correct or accurate or went against your own beliefs?
I would say, a lot of things I would say. I think the three big things were, one of them, I remember they believe in 6-day creationism, or it's not six, yeah, or yeah, the 6-day creation, like they take it literally. So they believe the earth is only 6,000 years old, which is impossible. I grew up as a kid around computers and stuff, and I would search things and I'm just like, this doesn't add up. Like,
no.
So I knew that was suspect, especially when I got to high school. I was homeschooled, but we used a very conservative kind of textbook that just glossed over lots of subjects and made all kinds of just suspect blanket statements about things. So that caused me to question it. And another thing was to just. At the time, I was also unsure about my faith, what I believed about it, and so Calvinism was a big one that I questioned. To me, it didn't make any sense.
Calvinism.
So, Presbyterian. So, he's like considered the father of the Presbyterian church within Reformed theology, but we held to sort of the 5 points of Calvinism. I'll let listeners look that up later if they want to. But the big one that I always struggled with was the idea of predestination. So if you were, it's basically God chooses the people that he is going to save, you know, before, or chose this before the world was ever created. So I was always like, well, how do you know if you're saved, if God chooses you and you don't choose him, if you don't have any agency in that? And there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of weird answers that you get asking that question. I guess for some people, they're satisfactory. To me, it wasn't. To me, it just made me lose sleep at night.
I just looked up Calvinism. Calvinism is a Protestant Christian theological tradition that originated in the 16th century. It's characterized by the idea of predestination, in which belief that God chose a limited number of people to be saved. Four of their key beliefs is total depravity. Humans are naturally unable to exercise free will because of Adam's fall. I'm guessing that's Adam and Eve. Unconditional election. God chose people to be saved based on his will, not their merit. And predestination. God chose who would be saved before the world began, and nothing a person could do could change their fate. And perseverance of the saints. Those chosen by God will persevere in their faith. So it sounds...
Well, that sounds cult-like. I'm just going to say, and I'm just going to ask, was there a number to that? Was it 144,000 that were saved? Because that's what my church taught.
No, well, we don't know.
That's because it was in the Bible. It was, I think it's in Revelation somewhere that there's 144,000 that are called or whatever, called or chosen, or depending on the version of the Bible you're reading, I suppose.
So
that's interesting.
My question would be is how do I know that I'm one of the chosen? Because it says here that no matter what I do, it cannot change my fate. So if I'm doomed, if I join this church and I'm doomed, whether I'm a good Christian or not, I'm doomed, meaning I'm going to hell or I'm not, whatever. It wouldn't give me any purpose to continue. It's kind of anti.
Yeah, it's
back ass words.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's paradoxical at best.
Yeah, because in the Catholic world or in many churches, do good unto others, the Ten Commandments, yada yada, and you will go to heaven. You know, so if you follow these Ten Commandments and you're kind to your neighbor and you don't use God's name in vain, all that stuff, you will die and go to heaven. What they're telling me here is, no matter what you do, you're
already fucked. Predestined to do it.
That's what it felt like.
So why, unless God dropped down in front of me and said, yeah, you're one of the chosen one, why would I go forward with this belief?
Have you ever seen Robert Edgar's The Witch?
No. I haven't.
A movie?
It's a movie. It's about a Puritan family that gets kicked out of the colony in Plymouth. And they build their own cabin in the woods, and then ended up getting haunted by the devil. And then the girl goes and ends up joining like a coven at the end. Sorry to spoil it for everybody, but there's my parents. Basically, it's like I felt like they basically believed what the Puritans in that movie believed. There's a scene where I think the boy in it brings up that question, and the father just kind of answers it, basically, you know, nobody knows, you know, who's going to heaven or not, but we just have to trust that God's going to be gracious. And that was kind of it, which is, and it just kind of leaves you feeling pretty like empty. And
that's the ultimate faith. I mean, you really have to believe in this
stuff. You're one of the ones.
Just hope.
Yeah, that's unusual. That one, I think that's a new one for us, actually. I haven't heard,
Melody, I was just thinking of that. This is, well, I think this is a cult. It's just, they did, so there's no pedophilia, there was no corruption, there was no, all the stuff that we hear. But the fact that they followed Calvinism and back-ass word thinking,
yeah,
why would I join a church like that? Again, this is, me speaking, I'm not a cult survivor, and I'm the outsider here. But
remember, nobody joins a cult; they join a religion or a group, and
they
join
a religion, right?
No. I think it shares enough similarity to like other churches,
right?
But it's like when you really boil it down, it's like I think it's a church for theology nerds. Who want a church that worships Reformed theology, John Calvin, and like the London Baptist Confession of Faith and what the Puritans believed. It's weird.
That's a good description, actually.
It's a very good description, and it's very antiquated. So because while America was built on the the British coming over, and they had all their beliefs. They wanted freedom of religion, and then of course Christianity came over, and the Spaniards came over, and all that. But when you mentioned Plymouth,
Roger Williams started the first Reformed Baptist Church in Rhode Island, but the denomination shares no lineage whatsoever with Roger Williams. Like, they don't trace their history back to Roger Williams at all. I mean, that church now is no longer considers itself Reformed Baptist. It's a part of, I don't know what group they're a part of now, but they're a very, well established,
more mainstream,
accepting church, mainstream church in Providence that's beloved by the community. So it's just interesting. So they don't share any connection to them at all. It's, from what I can tell, is it probably grew out of more conservative denominations, just kind of morphed into its own thing, where they call themselves Reformed Baptist because they sort of collect different parts of Reformed theology that they like to form the belief system.
Oh, the salad bar, Andrew. So they picked and chose the beliefs they wanted from other religions and created their own.
Okay, Brooke, personal question. And of course, you're free to say I'm not going to answer, but I haven't heard you mention boyfriend, husband, children. So where are you today with your faith? And do you have a family? And how do you raise them, if you do?
So the way I would answer this question is, do I really believe that there's somebody up in the sky that cares what we do? Not really. I can't give any scientific answer whether there's a justification for God or not. However, I think sometimes I do like having some spirituality. So I guess sometimes I would consider myself Christian, but I'm not a religious person. Rarely go to church. I currently have a girlfriend. We're both don't have any kids.
Okay, so would you say that your belief is more in a higher power?
Yes, but even that, I mean, I don't know. I consider myself Christian, I guess, more in just a cultural sense. Like, I think that there are good things and bad things about it, I feel like. And sometimes I think that has good advice, and sometimes it's very poor advice. Where, honestly, I'm still kind of on a journey to pin down exactly what I believe, to be honest. I don't consider myself an atheist, but I always have difficulty calling myself a Christian, because especially in today's day and age, I feel like a lot of people would lump me into, some kind of religious fanatic group that I don't want to be a part of. And really, I'm not religious.
I'm going to ask the question because there's a white elephant in the room. So you just came out and told us you had a girlfriend. So does that play a role? Were you shunned or told? So, because I know in many churches and in the early Roman Catholic days, homosexuality was just not tolerated. So did that play a role in all in you? Yeah, see?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. All right. Okay. Because I know that's just a taboo in most of these controlling
religions.
Cults. Yeah.
No, I would not. Like, I would not be accepted. I definitely would not be accepted as a member of my church growing up at all.
Yeah. When did you come out?
In, say, probably 2021.
And how do your parents know?
I didn't come out to them. They were they found out about it.
Okay.
Because I wasn't comfortable telling them.
But
they weren't pleased.
What was their reaction?
I got a whole long text paragraph from my dad that was super preachy.
Yeah.
And I was basically like, I tried to sort of engage with it for a little bit and have a conversation with it. But my experience talking to them is like talking at a brick wall. It's just their
beliefs are set in stone.
Can't convince them of anything. It just feels like they're living in a different reality. And eventually, I thought we had come to an agreement, and I said, "Well, like, I don't want to be proselytized. Like, stop." And then they were like, "Okay, we'll stop talking about like politics or like what you believe." Basically, I'm like, "Okay." And then, the very next day, I got a whole same another long paragraph that was trying to like proselytize me again, and I responded to it, and I'm just like, "What? Like, why am I doing this?" I'm like, I'm not going to do this. And then I haven't really talked to them since.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a sister. As far as I know, she's Southern Baptist.
Okay, so you don't have contact with her anymore either.
I don't have a super great relationship with her. It's
so when you say Southern, we're still. When you say Southern Baptist, not the Reformed one.
No, she's not Reformed Baptist, so it's a little better.
Okay,
Otherwise it's obscure.
Do they accept gays?
No.
There's very few churches that do.
Really, there are. Southern Baptist is, by the title, it's mostly churches in the South that would call themselves Southern Baptist. I know for a while there were kind of two camps. There was like one camp that tended to be more liberal and one that didn't. Albert Mohler like took over the seminary, made it conservative, and I know there's definitely been a whole push towards conservatism. So I don't really know much about their history or where they stand now. But I would say most of them are conservative and most of them are not accepting.
Right. But I do think more churches are becoming more accepting of different
outside of Yeah, definitely out. Well, if they,
yeah,
if
probably more Baptist non-denominational, do, maybe.
Right, non-denominational. Yeah.
Okay.
But they might become non-denominational if the Southern Baptist Convention kicks them out or something.
Right. Well, do you have any closing thoughts or any advice you would like to give anybody that might currently be in a group that they think maybe cult-like or even have cult-like characteristics? Because you're not the first interview we've done with somebody that's in a little bit more mainstream religion coming from that direction, and that they have more, instead of being full-blown cult, they have a lot of cult-like characteristics. And I think you're falling into that category because yours kind of teeters on a little bit of both. But yeah, some people in those situations may need advice as well. Do you have any advice for somebody that might be in a group similar to yours or in that situation that you would like to share?
I think the biggest thing that I would say is attend other churches to get a feel for what real community can be like. There are so many other churches that, you know, do community outreach, who, you know, care about their community, try to make a difference in the world. I think, you know, somebody would be much better off in a church like that that actually does some form of community outreach. And then the other thing too is, I mean, just hopefully, if not out of just, you know, love for humanity, you'd want to be a part of something like that. But I think the other thing too is, like, for your own personal sanity, it's good to have. It's good to be exposed to differences of opinion, and I want to be in an environment where if you have a disagreement, you can bring it up without feeling like you have to leave the church over it.
If you're in a religious organization and it teeters on cult and you have a question or critical thinking, like you say, so let's take example of the 6,000 year old earth which we all know that's just ridiculous. I'm coming from, I guess, society's educational system where the dinosaurs roamed the earth 50 million years ago. So the earth, and we have evidence of that because there's dinosaur bones. So dinosaurs, if there's bones and whatever, and there's even proof that, you know, asteroids hit the earth 20 million years ago, whatever. So when you have proof like that, or you said, so you go to your pastor, questions, and you go to your pastor and you say, but the earth is more than 6 days, you know, I think what I'm saying is, like, you're going to another church that either doesn't believe that, or that you can actually have an open discussion about that and not be chastised.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's, you know, explore other churches, and pick one that has connections to a broader community. Like, yeah, the community that I grew up in was so small. It's like, if you stayed within that denomination, it's like you're just constantly surrounded by people who believe the same things. You're never gonna learn.
No, and I don't think you're gonna learn anything in a religious organization. You're gonna learn their doctrine. You're not gonna learn.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right, Brooke, are you active on social media, and are you active about preaching about, or are you just living your life and this is behind you? This is,
yeah, it's behind me. I am active on social media, but I want to get more active, I think, in talking about this sort of thing.
Well, today's a good start.
We're a good start. Exactly. I was thinking the same thing, Andrew. Exactly. Good start. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Brooke, and sharing your story and your experiences and being honest with us. And I'm just going to add here, I think that it was a great, because I could tell you were struggling to answer the question about where you were. And I love that you came to that conclusion and the honesty in saying, basically, you almost came to the conclusion yourself and answering the question and saying, I'm still deconstructing all of that and I'm still in the process. And I thought that it was really actually very, I'm going to say, enlightening to see you come to that own conclusion yourself. It was like you were struggling to answer it, but you answered it very well in coming to that conclusion that you're still figuring it out, which is, you know, the best way. You just be honest about where you are. And sometimes, I mean, I'm still there. I'm still deconstructing. And how many years? I've been out of my cult for 30 years. So there we go. So Andrew, any closing thoughts for you?
No, other than I'm very proud that you came out to us, and I had sensed that there was something else holding back. And as we talked in the beginning, before we recorded, I said that, you know, we might ask questions that you may not want to answer, but thank you for answering that honestly. And I wish you and your girlfriend the best, and find a community that accepts you and never back down. Find acceptance for your lifestyle. And thank you so much.
Yeah. I would say of the two, I definitely lean a lot more atheistic now, you know, than I did back then. So
good.
It's a process.
Okay. Yeah.
It is.
So,
Brooke, thank you so much. Thank you for your honesty.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Be well.
Bye-bye.
We want to thank Brooke once again for coming on the show and sharing her story with us. I know that this is obviously part of her healing journey, and you can tell that she's still in the process of deconstructing. Yeah. And, you know, we have, that's the thing with these interviews, Andrew, is we catch people that are in their early stages of deconstruction, and we catch people that are in their late stages. And I think it certainly brings some diversity to the show. And I think that our listeners, depending on where they're at, are going to be able to relate in different ways because of that, depending on where they are in their own healing, right? So
we appreciate that.
Yes. And I also love the fact that she said, and I'm going to add, when she added on at the end, when we were talking about what her advice would be to other people, it just, do your research. And when you're getting ready to join a group, Google, look into that group and make sure that you're getting the good and the bad of all of the situation, and talk to ex members, people that were there and have their own experience and their own stories to share. So,
yeah. I'll bring this up really briefly, but as some of the listeners may or may not know, I'm also working, I don't know if it'll ever happen, but I'm working on trying to do a scam podcast where people can tell their stories of how they got scammed. And I listened to all this Scam podcast, and they're very similar to how people get into cults. Mm. People get scammed. They're vulnerable. Yeah. They're lonely. They're whatever. And I heard one today that was just heartbreaking. And it comes down to the man that I listened to today lost $450,000 on a construction scam because some guy knocked on his door and said, "Hey, your chimney needs fixing." And then 6 weeks later, they told him everything else that was wrong with the house, and nothing was wrong with the house. But he didn't do his due diligence. He should have said, "Thank you for telling me, and let me go out and get some other estimates." So it's like,
right.
If had he Googled or looked up local construction, but this was a cold knock on the door, and the guy said, "Hey, I'm in the neighborhood." So like Brooke said, do your research.
Yes.
Before you do anything. So if you get a phone call, if you get a email or a text message and it's offering something that's too good to be true, same thing with cults. If you find yourself, this organization looks so beautiful on the outside, do some research.
Oh, for sure. Just
because if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Probably is. Yep.
Yeah.
So once again, we do want to thank Brooke for coming on the show and sharing her experience. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms like Apple and Spotify, that does really help us out. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms such as Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you are an ex-cult member and you're in need of additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
If you'd like to hear more from me, you can check out my other podcast, The Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support by clicking on the link in the show notes called Buy Us a Cup of Coffee. Now, at the end of every episode, we say it's simply a link where you could donate $5. I got an email from them yesterday, and I forgot to tell you this, Melody, that you can now, and I have to look into it, you can become a monthly subscriber. So it's not mandatory. You could still just donate $5. But I think they're offering a package where you can...
So you can either become, you can either do a one-time donation or you can become a monthly,
right.
Monthly donor and, or whatever.
And I will look into that between now and our next episode, and I'll be more
prepared.
Have more clarity on that. So
okay.
Anyway, we could use your help if you could donate some money to the podcast.
Absolutely. And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.